Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Media Pass, and today is an awesome one. I'm really stoked on this. He's one of the best on the island, I would say. He's personally one of my favorite creators. He's someone who, when they release work, you make sure to stop scrolling and, yeah, watch the whole thing. He's won numerous awards. He's been published and shared countless times, and getting down to it, he's had a way larger impact on the next generation and his generation of videographers than he probably realizes. Luke Connor, how's it going, buddy? What's up?
Okay, so let's get into the thought process behind how I put together my office here.
And ever since I saw it the first time, I've been really interested in trying this technique out myself.
Five ways to instantly make better videos that you can start doing today.
What actually constitutes a transition?
Oh, let's go!
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to. Thanks for coming on the show. How's what have you been up to lately?
Shooting, done a couple commercials and some docs lately.
I'm not sure if you've heard any of the other episodes yet, but I've got a few standard questions that I like to ask, and then I've got specific questions for you. So we'll get kind of the standard questions out of the way. What brand of camera do you shoot on, give or take? I know you shoot on quite a lot. Are you a Mac or PC guy, and what editing platform are you working on?
I shoot on the Z cams, got the F6 Pro and the S6, and I'm on Mac. I got the Mac 14-inch Pro M2, I think, and DaVinci Resolve, which is working pretty well.
Yeah, nice. We could, again, get into this about DaVinci Premiere versus FCP. That could be a whole other conversation. But yeah, how's DaVinci working for you?
It's good. I just like it that it doesn't screw me over, because it actually just saves when it does it. And I like how everything's integrated, you know, and you're not kind of doing the hop between After Effects and Prelude and Audition and all that. Like, everything's just kind of all in one, and it's reliable. I think that, yeah, like you said, we could get into it, but I don't think there's any reason not to use Resolve.
Yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, the reliability is, I think, like the most important thing nowadays, for sure. Especially when there's like actual competitors, right?
Well, when it starts freezing up, you're just like, ah, okay, force quit. And you just reopen it and everything's fine. Whereas like Premiere, you're like, ooh, might lose the day's work here.
So yeah, I've got so many questions for you, and I could pick your brain for hours and hours, but I don't want to take too much of your time today. So without going too far to the start, but yeah, I wanted to start right at the beginning, I guess. Talk about your journey and when you started, yeah, videoing, photography, and just that. I know what I know about it, but yeah, just tell everyone else who doesn't know much about you.
I started just filming probably like 17 years ago or something, just, you know, filming friends skateboarding on parents' point and shoots and whatnot, and then kind of fell in love with it right away and, you know, started mowing lawns to buy a better camera, and then got a DVX, then got an old Sony FX7, and just kind of kept with it and shot skateboarding for a while until about 10 years ago when I started switching over to video as, you know, print magazines started getting a little more limited, as I was doing a lot of like publication work at the time. An editorial, and now it's just mostly like docs and commercial and a little bit of music videos.
Yeah, I remember seeing, obviously I've seen a lot of your print work for skateboarding and things like that back in the day, but the one that I always will remember is the I don't know the exact name of it, but you did a book for Victoria and like all the skate spots and different skaters, and I never got a copy of it, but I'm gonna have to nag you for one of those pretty soon, because it looked so good.
I might have a spare copy.
Yeah, we'll arrange that for sure. I definitely need one of those.
Yeah, for sure.
So how's it been participating and like watching the growth of video? Because you said you started like almost 17 years ago. You've been doing it longer than I have, and you've been shooting video before, I guess, like the general society knew the worth of it, for lack of better terms. So yeah, like how's the release of social media and like mainly Instagram and Reels and things like that? How's that affected your work?
Yeah, well, I guess there's always been worth to video. It's just been in, you know, different avenues, right? Like a lot more broadcast and more traditional forms of it, but it's definitely become more accessible, you know, like with the cost of gear and with, you know, obviously that drives competition, but definitely with like social media and all that, like, you know, for better or worse, like it's created, you know, definitely a market for video, which ironically I feel kind of sometimes guilty about, how it's like, you know, this thing is created and therefore all this, you know, everyone needs to market, right? You know, it's kind of like, kind of open up the belly of the beast a bit, but I think it's good. Like, it's just kind of, it's more so just a shift in marketing, you know, like as TVs kind of faded out and everything's moved more to our phones, like Instagram and all those socials are kind of just the new general TV for everyone, right? So it's been good. I mean, it's definitely created a lot of work for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. It's definitely like a positive, just like on the face of it. Like, there's obviously just more work, I think. But yeah, I just think it's interesting because, like, I guess I didn't put it in the question, but for someone like you who is so good at docs and documentary shooting and telling like a proper story, I would say like more film based than social media based for your proper projects. Like, don't get me wrong, I know you can shoot social media content, like, just, yeah, wavelengths ahead of a lot of people. But when I think of you, I think of like crazy docs, film type content. So it's, how has that affected that, like social media affected that for you?
In what way do you mean?
Just, I guess, like the release. Like, I mean, before it seemed like the accessibility for like a small town, smaller project type of, like the work that is probably not all the time you're doing, but the smaller projects that you're working on, the accessibility seems so much easier now because of social media. So, like, I guess, how has that affected your creative outlook?
I think, you know, like, how I always see it is, like, even if you're not, even if it's a simple job or it's just for social or, you know, it's that, or it's like, you know, a full-length feature documentary or a feature film, like, it's to always try and find something that's, you can learn from it. You know, and I think as long as you're kind of open to the just general opportunities and possibilities, then, you know, I don't really see any negatives in it, you know? I don't know, like, is that...
Yeah, no, and that's really a good thing. I think, like, a lot of people would, I mean, get affected by the fact that, yeah, just a lot of people will be viewing this, I guess. It's more of a social media aim than it is just your creative outlook aim, with all of the things that I didn't mention, social media deadlines and things like that, versus a bigger project where you kind of have, depending on the project, obviously more creative control, and then you can kind of decide.
Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, broadcasters can be pretty strict sometimes, right?
Yeah. How did you go from shooting skate videos to winning a Leo Best Cinematography in a feature-length doc? I mean, it's such a aspiring journey for so many people listening and for myself. Yeah, I mean, just talk about that journey a little bit and how you... I'm sure it wasn't something necessarily that you thought of and you went right for, but there obviously was some dreams and things that you have achieved along the way. So yeah, I just want to pick your brain about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always loved documentaries. Like, I was always used to, like, just binge-watch topdocs.com, you know, like... and different varieties of it. And I think when, you know, when I was starting out freelancing, like whenever documentary type projects would come up, I was really like keen to jump on them, you know, and I've always kind of appreciated that style of filmmaking and also like just kind of the unexpectedness of it, you know, like the stories generally tend to unfold in front of you a lot of the time. And yeah, I don't know. I think I just kept kind of like taking those jobs that were doc focused and then, you know, along with like TV stuff and then, yeah, I don't
just
know.
Kind of learning along the way type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I guess I kind of just got like, you know, started getting hiring for more doc projects. And
yeah, I mean, it's,
I wasn't expecting to win an award. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I guess
I should have gone to the screening. I didn't even go to the award ceremony because I didn't think that's it was funny. Gonna, I was like, totally should have fucking made the trip over.
Yeah, definitely should have gone to that one, probably. Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, congratulations if I haven't, I obviously said that at the time, but yeah, congratulations again, because that's such an achievement and that's, not many people can say that. Let's just say that.
Oh, thank you.
So how important is gear in that process? So going from shooting your first documentary to one of the recent ones that's getting awarded, how important is gear? Because I mean, yes, it's obvious that you're going to learn along the way. Shooting one documentary, you learn a lot. Shooting 10, you're going to, yeah, that's an obvious journey. But it's kind of impossible to explain out loud, but I just kind of wanted to hear your creative process and how you go about a doc, I guess.
I mean, I feel like the most important part about gear is just finding gear that works for you, you know, and ergonomics and all that is, I think, pretty important. I think when, if I was to go back, you know, like take a DSLR and try and add, you know, like preamps and XLR inputs and VMA battery and all this, and like, in hindsight, I should have just bought like, you know, a C100 or something. But I feel like all the gear is so good now, you know, like, obviously even phones are pretty crazy. So, I mean, like, I've always, like, looked at gear as just, you need to be able to, like, enjoy using it while you're working. And you deal with something for a bit, and then you're like, I'm sick of, like, dealing with this. So you just, like, buy the solution. You know what I mean? Like, whatever it may be, like, lenses, like, you know, oh, I just can't shoot in the dark enough. So it's like you buy some primes, or you can't, like, monitor two channels of audio while you're also, like, shooting. So you just get some float recordings. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's like gear is important to the point of like, if it's hindering you, then I would say like upgrade, right? But image wise,
yeah, no, that's a really good answer.
Everything's really,
that's a really good answer. Cause
good these days
for a creative person, I watched a video a while back now, but it was like a veteran videographer, like someone like you, and a rookie videographer, someone like me, like when you, like I first started type of thing. And they were both shooting on like an A64. Yeah, well, you remember a 6400 or something like that. And it was insane to watch the difference, because it's, yeah, just utilizing like things in the room, I guess, and the way that you see a scene. I mean, it's, I just find it so interesting, probably the way that you probably see life in general. Because in that video, it's like, it's not like they had hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of gear, or 10,000, 5,000, whatever. They literally had, I think, like one tube light and the camera on a tripod. And the one rookie was just kind of like standard interview style, person's against the wall, things you don't really think about at the start. Veteran is person's like creating depth of field, you know what I mean? Like 15 feet away from the wall, put like a background kitchen light on, like a key light and things like that. But it's all lighting that's in the room. So I love how you mentioned like ergonomics, because the more experience I get as a videographer, the less I want to put on my rig and the less I really feel like I need it sometimes.
Well, it's a time and a place,
it really,
right?
Depends on what you're doing. Time and place. Exactly.
I mean, I find like, you know, I used to rig out my GH6 or my GH4 and GH5 or whatever. And, but now it's like, you know, I have a bigger camera that's more integrated. So when I have like, I'm shooting with a mirrorless camera, it's like, ooh, I love how small it is. You know what I mean? Like, not slapping a VMA battery and an extra monitor on it. Like, just keep it light, you know? So, it's, but that's like, comes with the luxury of having like, you know, three or four cameras and just having them ready for situations. Cause,
yeah, definitely. You know,
that's a nice thing, is not having to like constantly rebuild your cameras for different situations.
That's, yeah.
And just having a couple bodies that are
the effect
ready to go. But, I mean, you know,
yeah, and always I think have a startle, that's a lot, like having that rig built and then not wanting to rebuild it because you only have exactly that one body.
Yeah, and I just like, you know, I feel like always show up to a, like if it's a paying job, I feel like it's always in your best interest to have a backup camera, even if it's not the fanciest, right? Like,
definitely learned that lesson a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, you know, have some insurance on your end in terms of that.
Exactly.
Never.
So speaking of other cameras, how did you get into FPV? And was it at the beginning or was it more towards the late end? I think I know what you're going to say because you're a very modest guy, but yeah, like in the general scope of FPV being used in common video, whenabouts did you get into it and how did you get into it?
I mean, I've been doing it for, I don't know, almost 4 years now since I started like looking into it. But I mean, the first year like was a lot of just research and building and not really much flying, to be perfectly honest. So I'd really say I've been flying for 3 years. But I don't know, like, I mean, FPV has been around for a long time, but I mean, I guess like in social media points, like it probably only started showing up in videos with like Johnny like a year or two prior, right?
Yeah, I would say about then, yeah.
Although like, you know, Gab7's done like, had done some stuff for, you know, BBC kind of stuff, right? And snowboards, that was, you know, probably like dating back to 2016.
I feel like that was when people didn't even realize what they were looking at.
Yeah, like it wasn't
myself
mainstream.
Included.
And also the gear was just horrendous compared to now, like with digital and stuff. So But I don't know, like, I got into FPV because I hadn't had a Mavic in a while, and I was like, I wanted to get drones again, and I was like, oh, but it'll be cheaper, you know, like a Cinewhoop and a GoPro is cheaper than a Mavic, and it's a little more niche. But it was like, that was my
How'd that turn out?
Oh, my first mistake, yeah, I was thinking that it was cheaper, because it's not.
yeah, but I mean, I've definitely made that mistake as well.
It definitely helps with, like, you know, I fly a lot of, like, Inspire and Mavic stuff now, too, but it's, like, definitely helped with, like, the ability on the sticks. Because you crash a lot, and, like, trying to do precise stuff, like, it definitely helps your confidence. Flying regular drones, like, now you fly a Mavic, and it's like, oh, this is, like, a cakewalk. Like, it just stays there.
100%.
You know, like, I can just, like, drink my coffee
the whole time.
Yeah, you're like, I can do this one-handed. Like,
yeah, literally.
It's hilarious.
So talk about flying FPV in the BB No Money music video, because I think that was a really cool, another achievement. Yeah, I just think that's really cool.
Oh, yeah. It was, we didn't get much time just because it was kind of left to the end and the light was getting low, and we did a couple laps, and then my Kinda FPV, my goggles locked up and the camera feed froze. So I had to disarm the drone. It took a little bit of a tumble, but it ended up making the cut. The camera was fine. And
that's sweet.
Just had to replace a couple motors and dinged up lens, but, you know, whatever.
Classic FPV stories, right?
Yeah. The director was like, I was like, oh, I'm sorry I crashed. He's like, I was honestly, like, expecting it to crash. He's like,
yeah, I could, it's kind of got that look to it.
Yeah. So, oh well.
So talk about the Hot Docs trailer, because I know you got a clip in that, and for anyone listening, yeah, just tell everyone about that, and then maybe talk about the clip as well, because that was an insane clip. I don't know how you did that.
That was that was from the doc that I won the Leo for, and I don't know, like, I just showed up in there and I got tagged and I was like, oh shit, this is in there. But it was just like, yeah, flying FPV like on a windy plane in Alberta chasing a horse. And
the clip, you got so much closer than
I think it was like
imagined.
You know.
I was watching it, and it's just like, I think, from my just memory right now, it like starts from behind the horse or something. I'm like, oh, this is an unbelievable shot. I thought you were just gonna do a follow, and then you go around like the left side in the front. Yeah, it was very, very well flown, and it just looked crazy. So,
thank you. It was windy that day. As soon as you took off the throttle, like, you had to be so sideways to like keep it with it, and then it's like you let go, and it's like, poof. Just gone into the wind.
Yeah, that doesn't make it easier for sure. So do you have any tips for, I guess, anyone getting into FPV while we're talking about it? But the question is, any tips for cinematographers, filmmakers who want to get into short films, or even film in general? And yeah, would like any role suggestions or anything like that?
And people, like, some people ask, like, you know, should I go to film school or whatever? And I mean, I was told not to by people that had gone. I think it's just like, it's so accessible now, and you know, you don't, the gear is accessible, you know, you can buy a good camera for something that'll get you by, or just shoot on your phone. And I think it's just try and find people who even just need help, you know, like just go volunteer on set or find an entry level position and just kind of like, you know, show initiative and kind of, you know, use it to suss out what department you might want to get into. If you're like looking for a more feature length kind of trajectory, and just from there, like, you don't need to spend $25,000 to figure out what you want to do in film, or to gain experience. So I would say just, you know, reach out to people, join as, you know, a PA on a feature. And I know of a lot of people that have been cherry picked and are now like first ACs, you know? So, just, yeah, go for it.
That makes sense. And what's your thoughts on working for free or waiting? So kind of a bit different than working in like the film avenue. This is more for like videography, I guess, and like the one-man band or like freelance world. As a beginner, would you suggest working for free or would you suggest waiting for paid projects? I know it's like a really common conversation for a lot of early on videographers or creatives in general.
Yeah, I mean, I would say always try and charge, you know, like once you feel like your work is worth it. But there's definitely been positives that I've had from just like, you know, helping out on the job or doing it for cheap or free or whatever it is. And, you know, more opportunities come from that. There's always the thing though, like when you're first starting out, like as soon as someone's paying you something, they kind of have a bit of a expectance, or like they kind of expect a little bit to be able to like, you know, have input onto the project. So I think create if you're trying
control
to
control as well, yeah.
Yeah, so I think if you're just trying to do your first couple projects and figure out your style and like figure out what works for you, I would say it's better to just do projects for free, because then you don't owe anyone anything. You know what I mean? Like, even if someone's paying you $100, it's like you kind of have to answer to something if they don't like it or whatever. It's like they're a client now. So
creative obligation, I guess.
Yeah. So I'd say, like, you know, unless if it's not paying, you know, properly, I would say just do it for free in the first bits. If you're just like trying to figure yourself out, right? And then if things go wrong, you know, you're not obligated to anything and whatever. And then once you feel like you, you know, are consistent and can be reliable and deliver a good product, then like start charging accordingly, right?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That totally makes sense to me. And that's exactly what we've had this conversation. But okay, so I've only got a few more questions before the quick fire round. I don't want to take too much of your time, but tell me about the first big project you did. And I know that's kind of like hard to answer, because depending on what like point of view, I guess, like for, if you're just started, your first big project's your first project, really. But tell me about your first big project to you.
So, I mean, honestly, like one of my first projects was kind of a first big project. Like, I have a family member up in Campbell River who has a production company, and she's been doing it for way longer than I have. And back in 2009, I guess, I was 16, in grade 10. And she got a contract to shoot a film for the 2010 Olympics that was like playing at all the major airports, like highlighting like major airport locations. And I guess Campbell River was one of them in terms of accessibility from YVR. So I shot B-cam on that, and it was like 5 days or something. And then, yeah, that was kind of like my introduction to filming. And we were doing like 10, 12 hour days. And I just remember being at like hour 10 being like, oh, I love this. Like, this is good. Like, I could do this all day. You know what I mean? And I think that's
such it's such a good feeling. And like, how did it affect you? That's insane that was like one of your first, like early on in your career. That's a huge project.
Yeah. First projects in Olympics.
You, like,
projects? Like,
yeah.
Kind of miles, a little lucky there.
How did that affect your like creative outlook for the project after that?
Well, unfortunately, it was like the next project was kind of little. I think it just like, you know, I just started shooting skate videos more after that. And I think it just kind of lit the spark for like, you know, just the desire to like keep pushing with film and photo, you know. And but like, I wasn't ever trying to like make it a career. I just like, I wanted to, you know, get to travel and work for myself. And it kind of came to a point where I was like, oh, like, this can work, you know. Like,
the more I'm talking to people who are successful as a creatives, I think that's really common, because I think, yeah, I mean, just from my experience, the people who are focusing on trying to make this a career, it's a very different journey. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, do what you will, but you know, I kind of fell into it in a way, right? Like, I mean, I fell into the career, I guess, right? Like, and
I mean, you fell, yeah. I think you fell into like the love of the craft, because like
I fell into all of
you, it. Tell me about your hobbies as well, because I mean, you can skateboard well. So I mean, you obviously were skateboarding, I assume, before video photo. And when I say well, I mean like very, very well. I can barely ollie up a curb. This boy can three flip. So I'm done there.
Yeah.
But yeah, tell me about how like your hobbies affect your videography, I guess, and just like your creative outlook in life. Like, do you need to go just take time off? And how important are hobbies that don't relate to creating, I guess?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I definitely used to like, I mean, I always like to take a camera everywhere, but I mean, like, I feel like, you know, there comes a time where you're like, okay, I've filmed enough sunsets. It's like, sometimes you just want to like enjoy it yourself, you know? But hobby wise, like, I think that it's easy to get stuck in kind of like a routine with filming, or like if you're, especially if you have a big edit on the go or something. So I think it's good having these things that like get you out of the house for at least an hour or 20 minutes, whatever it is a day, to help break it up, right?
Yeah, I found it really like important for me to, at the start, it was really hard to not just focus just on creating and kind of like forget all my other hobbies and everything like that. But now the busier I'm getting, yeah, it's just so important for me to, exactly like you're saying, take a break off. It really definitely affects the creative outlook for me, at least.
Yeah. And I mean, I used to be really bad at like taking a weekend, whatever, right? But kind of learned to just like you know, you got to take time. You got to put your phone down for a day sometimes and just focus on, you know, something else. And then come back to it with a fresh mind.
So tell me about Wrapped Films.
Well, I mean, I just started as Luke Connor like 8 years ago, and I've always wanted to change. I'm like bad at talking about myself, so I feel like if I had a company that was not my name, I'd be a little easier to like, you know, approach people or like talk about it, you know what I mean? Without just seeming like I'm just boastful.
I definitely know what you mean. It's a common misconception.
And then I had some names, and they just, you know, were either taken or like, you know, couldn't get the social handles or whatever. And then half my family's Australian, so I just like one night I was like, like, you know, whatever, I was gonna look up some Aussie slang. And then Wrapped came up, and kind of like looked past it at first. I was like, huh, it sounds like Wrapped, you know, like we're wrapped on the day. And then I looked up the meaning, and then the meaning of it is just like you're in awe of what you're seeing and hearing. So I figured, well, that's what you can only hope for in a video, right? Like, it looks good, sounds good. You know?
Yeah, that's sweet. Generally the plan.
Yeah, so it's kind of a bit of like a double meaning. I was like, all right, that's the one. And then, yeah, the licensing, everything went through. So here we are, made a decision.
Such a hard part of starting a business, not necessarily to do with creative nowadays especially, is just coming up with the name. It's absolutely impossible to get the handles, your business license name, everything to match up and available. So, and it be four letters. Yeah, insane. Well done. All right, we're over to the quick fire round. This is always the same. Quick questions, even quicker responses. And yeah, let's just get right into it. What was your first camera?
Pentax KX.
If you had one focal length to shoot with for the rest of your life, what would it be?
40 mil.
I love that. What's your favorite movie?
Avatar or like Inception?
Yeah, those are both, yeah, nice answers. Favorite, who's your favorite director?
Wes Anderson.
Where's your favorite place to travel?
Australia.
What's your favorite time of day to shoot?
Early morning or late afternoon.
Nice, nice. What's your favorite backdrop? Nature, city, urban, forest?
Nature.
And in under 5 words, what ignited your videography bug?
Skateboarding.
And this one, I hope to know the answer. If you won the lottery tomorrow, would you retire or would you keep creating?
I'd keep shooting. I just wouldn't take projects I didn't want to do. I'd probably just like shoot all the cool stuff I really want to do and, you know, keep doing it.
I'd love to see more travel films from you. Your video from Bali was just insane. I loved that video so much. The color grade on that,
I'd definitely travel more if I won the lottery. So that's probably all I'd be doing is just travel films.
Yeah, I know, right? I think I know the answer for everyone who I asked that. But yeah, it's just a good question to ask, I think. All right, Ben. Yeah, just thank you so much for doing this. If you don't know who Luke Connor is before this, hopefully you know a lot more now. Go check out his work. It's going to take you down a rabbit hole. There's so much to learn from, so much to see. He's one of those guys who, as another creative, you think, how the hell did he come up with this idea? And how did you shoot it so well? So yeah, go check out his stuff. Luke, what's your social handles?
Wrapped Film Company. So RAPT Film Company and wrappedfilm.ca.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much. And yeah, we'll see everyone next time.